As you command, Princess. She leaned back, peered knowingly at Titanic. You do not approve of me, I know that. It is unimportant to me, as long as you remember the lesson of the Levenbreck. He was very good with animals, but disposable. Yes, Princess, that is not what I mean. It isn't? Then I don't understand. An army, she said, is composed of disposable, completely replaceable parts. That is the lesson of the Levenbreck. Replaceable parts, he said, including the Supreme Command. Without the Supreme Command, there is seldom a reason for an army, Titanic. That is why you will immediately embrace this Mahdi religion, and, at the same time, begin the campaign to convert my son. At once, Princess. I assume you don't want me to stint his education in the other martial arts at the expense of this, religion?
She pushed herself out of the chair, strode around him, paused at the door, and spoke without looking back.
Some day you will try my patience once too often, Titanic.
With that, she let herself out.
Either we abandon the long-honored theory of relativity, or we cease to believe that we can engage in continued accurate prediction of the future. Indeed, knowing the future raises a host of questions which cannot be answered under conventional assumptions, unless one first projects an observer outside of time, and, second, nullifies all movement. If you accept the theory of relativity, it can be shown that time and the observer must stand still in relationship to each, or inaccuracies will intervene. This would seem to say that it is impossible to engage in accurate prediction of the future. How, then, do we explain the continued seeking after this visionary goal by respected scientists? How, then, do we explain Muad'Dib?
Lectures on Prescience by Hark al-Adda.
I must tell you something, Jessica said, even though I know my telling will remind you of many experiences from our mutual past, and that this will place you in jeopardy.
She paused to see how Ghanim was taking this. They sat alone, just the two of them, occupying low cushions in a chamber of siege tabor. It had required considerable skill to maneuver this meeting, and Jessica was not at all certain that she had been alone in the maneuvering. Ghanim had seemed to anticipate and augment every step. It was almost 2 hours after daylight, and the excitements of greeting and all of the recognitions were past. Jessica forced her pulse back to a steady pace and focused her attention into this rock-walled room with its dark hangings and yellow cushions. To meet the accumulated tensions, she found herself for the first time in years recalling the litany against fear from the Bene Gesserit rite.
I must not fear. Fear is the mind-killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me, and when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain.
She did this silently, and took a deep, calming breath.
It helps at times, Ghanim said. The litany, I mean.
Jessica closed her eyes to hide the shock of this insight. It had been a long time since anyone had been able to read her that intimately. The realization was disconcerting, especially when it was ignited by an intellect which hid behind a mask of childhood. Having faced her fear, though, Jessica opened her eyes and knew the source of turmoil.
I fear for my grandchildren.
Neither of these children betrayed the stigmata of abomination which Alia flaunted, although Leto showed every sign of some terrifying concealment. It was for that reason he'd been deftly excluded from this meeting. On impulse, Jessica put aside her ingrained emotional masks, knowing them to be of little use here, barriers to communication. Not since those loving moments with her Duke had she lowered these barriers, and she found the action both relief and pain. There remained facts which no curse or prayer or litany could wash from existence. Flight would not leave such facts behind. They could not be ignored. Elements of Paul's vision had been rearranged, and the times had caught up with his children. They were a magnet in the void, evil and all the sad misuses of power collected around them. Ghanim, watching the play of emotions across her grandmother's face, marveled that Jessica had let down her controls. With catching movements of their heads remarkably synchronized, both turned, eyes met, and they stared deeply, probingly at each other. Thoughts without spoken words passed between them. Jessica,
I wish you to see my fear.
Ghanim,
now I know you love me.
It was a swift moment of utter trust. Jessica said,
When your father was but a boy, I brought a reverend mother to Caladan to test him.
Ganima nodded. The memory of it was extremely vivid.
We Bene Gesserits were already cautious to make sure that the children we raised were human and not animal. One cannot always tell by exterior appearances. It's the way you were trained, Ganima said,
and the memory flooded into her mind. That old Bene Gesserit, Gaius Helen Mohiam. She'd come to Castle Caladan with her poisoned Gam Jabbar and her box of burning pain. Paul's hand, Ganima's own hand in the shared memory, screamed with the agony of that box, while the old woman talked calmly of immediate death if the hand were withdrawn from the pain. And there had been no doubt of the death in that needle, held ready against the child's neck while the aged voice droned its rationale.
You've heard of animals chewing off a leg to escape a trap? There's an animal kind of trick. A human would remain in the trap, endure the pain, feigning death that he might kill the trapper and remove a threat to his kind.
Ganima shook her head against the remembered pain. The burning! The burning! Paul had imagined his skin curling black on that agonized hand within the box, flesh crisping and dropping away until only charred bones remained. And it had been a trick, the hand unharmed, but sweat stood out on Ganima's forehead at the memory.
Of course you remember this in a way that I cannot, Jessica said.
For a moment, memory-driven, Ganima saw her grandmother in a different light. What this woman might do out of the driving necessities of that early conditioning in the Bene Gesserit schools. It raised new questions about Jessica's return to Arrakis.
It would be stupid to repeat such a test on you or your brother, Jessica said. You already know the way it went. I must assume you are human, that you will not misuse your inherited powers. But you don't make that assumption at all, Ganima said.
Jessica blinked, realized that the barriers had been creeping back in place, dropped them once more. She asked,
Will you believe my love for you?
Yes.
Ganima raised a hand as Jessica started to speak.
But that love wouldn't stop you from destroying us. Oh, I know the reasoning. Better the animal-human die than it recreate itself. And that's especially true if the animal-human bears the name Atreides.
You, at least, are human, Jessica blurted.
I trust my instinct on this.
Ganima saw the truth in this, said,
But you're not sure of Leto.
I'm not.
Abomination?
Jessica could only nod. Ganima said,
Not yet, at least. We both know the danger of it, though. We can see the way of it in Alia.
Jessica cupped her hands over her eyes, thought,
Even love can't protect us from unwanted facts.
And she knew then that she still loved her daughter, crying out silently against fate.
Alia, oh Alia, I am sorry for my part in your destruction.
Ganima cleared her throat loudly. Jessica lowered her hands, thought,
I may mourn my poor daughter, but there are other necessities now, she said. So you've recognized what happened to Alia. Leto and I watched it happen. We were powerless to prevent it, although we discussed many possibilities. You're sure that your brother is free of this curse?
I'm sure.
The quiet assurance in that statement could not be denied. Jessica found herself accepting it. Then,
How is it you've escaped?
Ganima explained the theory upon which she and Leto had settled, that their avoiding of the spice trance while Alia entered it often made the difference. She went on to reveal his dreams and the plans they'd discussed, even Jakarutu. Jessica nodded.
Alia is an Atreides, though, and that poses enormous problems.
Ganima fell silent before the sudden realization that Jessica still mourned her duke as though his death had been but yesterday, that she would guard his name and memory against all threats. Personal memories from the Duke's own lifetime fled through Ganima's awareness to reinforce this assessment, to soften it with understanding.
Now, Jessica said, voice brisk, what about this preacher? I heard some disquieting reports yesterday after that damnable lustration.
Ganima shrugged.
He could be...
Paul?
Yes, but we haven't seen him to examine. Javid laughs at the rumors, Jessica said.
Ganima hesitated. Then...
Do you trust this Javid?
A grim smile touched Jessica's lips.
No more than you do. Leto says Javid laughs at the wrong things, Ganima said. So much for Javid's laughter, Jessica said. But do you actually entertain the notion that my son is still alive? That he has returned in this guise? We say it's possible. And Leto...
Ganima found her mouth suddenly dry, remembered fears clutching her breast. She forced herself to overcome them, recounted Leto's other revelations of prescient dreams. Jessica moved her head from side to side as though wounded. Kanima said,
"Leto says he must find this preacher and make sure." "Yes, of course. I should never have left here. It was cowardly of me." "Why do you blame yourself? You had reached a limit. I know that. Leto knows it. Even Alia may know it."
Jessica put a hand to her own throat, rubbed it briefly. Then,
"Yes, the problem of Alia."
"She works a strange attraction on Leto," Ganima said. "That's why I helped you meet alone with me. He agrees that she is beyond hope, but still he finds ways to be with her and study her. And it's very disturbing. When I try to talk against this, he falls asleep. Is she drugging him?"
"No."
Ganima shook her head.
"But he has this odd empathy for her, and in his sleep he often mutters, 'Jakurutu.'"
"That again?"
And Jessica found herself recounting Gurney's report about the conspirators exposed at the landing field.
"I sometimes fear Alia wants Leto to seek out Jakurutu," Ganima said. "And I always thought it only a legend. You know it, of course."
Jessica shuddered.
"Terrible story, terrible."
"What must we do?" Ganima asked. "I fear to search all of my memories, all of my lives."
"Gani, I warn you against that. You mustn't risk—"
"It may happen even if I don't risk it. How do we know what really happened to Alia?"
"No! You could be spared that possession."
She ground the word out.
"Well, Jakurutu, is it? I've sent Gurney to find the place, if it exists."
"But how can he—"
"Oh, of course, the smugglers."
Jessica found herself silenced by this further example of how Ganima's mind worked in concert with what must be an inner awareness of others.
"Of me?"
How truly strange it was, Jessica thought, that this young flesh could carry all of Paul's memories, at least until the moment of Paul's spermal separation from his own past. It was an invasion of privacy against which something primal in Jessica rebelled. Momentarily, she felt herself sinking into the absolute and unswerving Bene Gesserit judgment.
"Abomination!"
But there was a sweetness about this child, a willingness to sacrifice for her brother, which could not be denied.
"We are one life reaching out into a dark future," Jessica thought. "We are one blood."
And she girded herself to accept the events which she and Gurney Halleck had set in motion. Leto must be separated from his sister, must be trained, as the sisterhood insisted.
"I hear the wind blowing across the desert, and I see the moons of a winter night rising like great ships in the void. To them I make my vow. I will be resolute and make an art of government. I will balance my inherited past and become a perfect storehouse of my relic memories. And I will be known for kindliness more than for knowledge. My face will shine down the corridors of time for as long as humans exist."
Leto's Vow, after Hark al-Ada. When she had been quite young, Alia Atreides had practiced for hours in the Prana Bindu trance, trying to strengthen her own private personality against the onslaught of all those others. She knew the problem. Mélange could not be escaped in a siege warren. It infested everything: food, water, air, even the fabrics against which she cried at night. Very early, she recognized the uses of the siege orgy, where the tribe drank the death water of a worm. In the orgy, Fremen released the accumulated pressures of their own genetic memories, and they denied those memories. She saw her companions being temporarily possessed in the orgy. For her, there was no such release, no denial. She had possessed full consciousness long before birth. With that consciousness came a cataclysmic awareness of her circumstances, womb locked into intense, inescapable contact with the personas of all her ancestors and of those identities death transmitted in Spicetow to the Lady Jessica. Before birth, Alia had contained every bit of the knowledge required in a Bene Gesserit Revered Mother, plus much, much more from all those others. In that knowledge lay recognition of a terrible reality.